didn't want to associate with the younger ones because they're going to be gone. And then the same way with my mother, there was a disconnect because we were going to be gone through the policies of the federal government. And so Kevin's me now as a father, and not hugging my own children, but arguing with my daughter, and my daughter making a stand in a position about her. And so coming back and having those ugly talks with my mother and realizing that what she was describing was post-war syndrome. Now, when I became the chairman of the tribe, I used to read all the reports. Drugs, alcohol, not being a father, mother leaving children. And so I used to tell my directors, you have to go further back to the link of where this started from. Because one of the things my mother worked really hard at was to not be like my father and his dad. Because a lot of alcoholism was there. Because you got to remember, men weren't men anymore. Men couldn't be men for those conditions that we lived under. So people gave up about what they were going to be like for tomorrow. But I always remember my mother really crying and really working hard with the four sons that she had to say, no, we can't allow this to happen. No, we can't. You can't do that. We have to come back. We have to come back because of what the prophecy says in the Apache way, that we have to come back. Because if not, then everything is chaos in this world. And with that brought the teaching of, I guess, my journey in this role about what was going to happen next. Because the disease that she was passing to me was to be invisible. Because when I grew up on the reservation and going to the town of Globe, which was 23 miles away, we hid in the car and we had the opportunity, we had to stay beside my mother. And for her, it was really important not to be seen. Because if we were seen, we were going to be taken away. So that same fear lived and lived until the arguments began about why. Why do we have to hide? And this comes this generation, making that position to stand and to make a big difference. And I applaud the next generation because they were bringing in questions and questioning all of us in leadership, questioning us who were holy people, questioning the elders, questioning. But we had to listen to the younger people because they didn't know who they were going to be and what they were going to be. And so that was something really important about the disease that lives on the reservation that comes from post-war syndrome. We have to remember that there was a war here in America. You have to remember that there were people put in concentration camps. You have to remember that these places are called reservations today. And that's why you hear all these horrifying stories. So my journey was internally that I had to lead my people in a different direction. I had to tell my people the ugly story of reality, of why we're like this. Because so many of us were standing up for the flag, so many of us were singing the songs, so many of us were wearing the shirts, but not even understanding why we had the flags and t-shirts and shirts. Because we're the only people can be different about it. Because every one of those stars, those colors, representing conquering America. America has gone to a lot of foreign wars, but never have put a star in that flag of conflicts that they were in. So when we see the American flag, it's a reminder of what happened to us. Now, I don't know about here in Oregon, but in Arizona, when Geronimo was captured, in every little town, they put celebrating Globe founded in 1872. 1872 was when we were all put as prisoners of war in the Oak Flags area. We were removed in 1872. So Miami and Globe, the surrounding towns, celebrate that year. But so when we see that number, we see the horrifying events that took place and putting us as prisoners of war. And now today, our people suffered from that. So the big push was internally for me to work with my people and to understand their perspective and to heal. We have to heal. And so I tell my people, I am a victim of the past. But you know what? I said, I don't fear the future anymore. Because I understand what happened to my people and what happened to me. Because only then can we heal. But if you go on imagining and pretending, then you don't heal. So I said, as much as tribal leadership don't like it, as much as our surrounding towns don't like it, as much as the state of Arizona don't like it, and the United States Congress, it's going to be said. Because we love this place as much as everybody else. And the only way America is going to heal is by truth. By truth. Because if not, you and I know that when you're living a lie, it never heals. You pass it, and you pass it, and you pass it. But when we confront, then only healing can come from that. This is what you're witnessing here. It's because we're saying no more. We will never live in the frame of the policy of the United States and everybody else that made this frame of law for us to live within that confinement. That's called decolonization. But you know what, people? My trip to Washington, D.C., and stopping in many of the states, making my way to Washington, I learned you are also colonized. You are also. So the point is that we and you have to heal. Together, we have to heal. It's a very important spiritual message that's coming. You have to believe. Because if you go back to the founding of this country, and you can do the European studies, if America has hidden ours, but America was founded for its natural resources. America was founded to please the colonizing countries for their status. And why I say that strongly today is because you look at what John McCain is doing. Through John McCain, he wiped out NEPA, the five cultural laws that protect the land that you and I have to abide by, was exempt by a late night rider in a defense bill, a must-pass bill. That became an American fight. It's no longer an Apache fight. It's you and I fighting what John McCain did. Because what he failed to do from the tribal perspective, what he failed to do was to insert in this law that what he has planned to do or going to do does not affect reservations. And the reason why I say that is because reservation is owned by the federal government, federal land. So right now, as I speak, as long as this bill remains and it stays, then all Native people's religion, voice, and the way of life has been destroyed. Right now, as I speak. This is why in no other fight in this country has over 500 recognized federal tribes have banded together. Resolutions are being passed throughout this country because I would think that all religious people will be offended by this. I would think that all military people, past and present, would be offended by this. For the purpose of going and protecting the rights for our religion and for the right to be heard. And it being John McCain escalates it even more so. Because of what he states throughout this country and what he says, but yet does totally opposite within this country. So people, we come here to your beautiful part of the country and our native brothers and sisters, the first people, and ask for help. We come here to ask for help because we are not the only ones being affected by it. We all are. So the position that we take here is not to defend only our children, but the children of this country and the ones yet to be born. Because I'll give you just a real basic example. In our annual run to Mount Graham, 25 years ago, the railroad tracks, there was over 15 men working on the railroad tracks, pulling and replacing and hammering. Last year, when we ran, there was only 2 people working because they had this massive machine pulling, replacing, and hitting. And this is the biggest fear that in Apache country we talk about these mechanical things coming that has no brain, but can be used for good and bad. So the younger ones, when we go by and we see this transformation happening, brings that great fear that the ones before us talked about. Where is this country going? There are arguments about jobs and jobs and jobs, but it's all going to technology. What's going to happen to the rest of the human beings? And that's why I tell you, that's what they did to us when they placed us on the reservation, to be no more who we are. So when these mechanical things take over, who are you going to be? Who are your children going to be? And that's why it's so important that American people re-root themselves. Another thing that I learned crossing this country is how we're not rooted anymore. You know, I've been in so many places and talked to so many people. But when I met all the African Americans, to all their leaders, you know, they were cut at the bottom of the feet to bring here, but never was rerooted. The oriented people, times I spent with them back east, Philadelphia, and everywhere else, tell me the same story. Even though they're here, they don't feel like they're from here. They were never rerooted. And then the first Americans, the white Americans who came, were brought here too, not knowing that it was for an economic reason for the other country.
So Winsor, you're currently
they never were rooted here.
Trouble.
And the sad thing about Native Americans is that we're lifting our feet and we're cutting our own roots to be like everybody else. And that scares me. Because once we're not rooted, then that's where they say chaos will come. Because nobody will have that foundation of where we came from. It's lost in this next generation. So it's important that we understand, and that my appreciation across this country now is that we all have to decolonize. We all have to heal. And the only way that's going to happen is through spirituality. No other way. No other way is it going to happen. Because everyone has a conscience, has a spirit. And if it's done right, then the unification will come as one to heal our spirit and the mother of this earth. We all have a history. We all have a purpose. In Apache country, when we do our sweats, the prayer is about return, return. And believe me, change is coming, but do you hear it? You have to hear it and you have to feel it. Because that's the greatest gift that God has given the world. And this is the message that we're taking across this country. And we know, as I tell the younger people, it's like a gift, a present. Beautiful. But when you unwrap it, you're going to find the ugliness that deceived us. And that's where we are headed as a people. So people, you already are part of that. I'll give you an example. On Mount Graham, the Pope sent his cardinal to Tucson, Arizona, who got into some really nice vehicles and drove to Mount Graham, about 80 miles away, from desert to about 11,000 feet, drove to the very top. And people surrounded him. And I remember standing there, and this was the telescope project. They were trying to build 32 telescopes on Mount Graham. And I always remember he asked people to step aside. He wanted some time. 15 minutes. Then he came back to the crowd and told the crowd, there's no spiritual feeling here. So I feel nothing. Got back in his vehicle, had it back down, and went back to Rome. So we all looked at him and said, what? You have to sacrifice in order to feel what God has given the world. So this is why we take all our people on this journey. Because it's like me going to your house. If I don't ask for permission, I'm not welcome. I'm disobedient. I'm ignorant. But if I ask for permission, then you will open your house. It's the same thing with the environment. Because when those corridors open, then you feel the spirituality of what God gave the world. And that's where technology with these things are scary. You can still have it, but understand this as the base, because all that can be misused to this here. So, where we are today is that we are not vacating this place. We have no permits, nothing. They will have to force us off the sacred land. And there are two bills in the House. Well, there's a bill in the House and there's a bill in the Senate. Sponsors and co-sponsors. But you have John McCain and Gosar holding it up. We're going to need your help to notify them that this needs to be heard in a committee. But it is setting up a lawsuit for us. The negligence of the United States. Because there is already a sponsor and co-sponsor on the bill. But if you can help me, www.fancystronghold.com. I'll learn. So if you can help me, we need America's involvement because it's not just our battle anymore. It's everybody's battle here. So with the remaining time, I want to leave it for my granddaughter. My granddaughter here, after being exiled in the sacred place, in the holy place of Jishun Chasaan, my grand, over 100 years, we returned to have our ceremony after we had been exiled out of these sacred places. And now my granddaughter leads this fight for the next generation. But just like every other father and grandfather, I worry about her. Because as my life is being threatened by the mining people, I was supposed to speak in Mexico. But when they got word I was coming, I was told not to go for my safety. Back in Arizona, I wear a vest. Here, I figure I didn't need to wear a bulletproof vest. But in Arizona, I do. But my granddaughter here is now being threatened.
And that's a little bit of Apache traditional music as a bridge. You just heard Wenzler Nosey, Apache tribal councilman and leader of his people, at the recent Public Interest Environmental Law Conference. Unfortunately, his granddaughter's talk, which was just amazing, Nalin Pike, the audio just was not able to be broadcast, unfortunately. But in this next piece, an interview I did with both him and Nalin, you will be able to hear her as well. And then we'll have, hopefully, Wenzler live to talk about some recent developments on this situation. You're currently a tribal councilman and involved in many other things with your tribe. The first question I would ask, what does it mean to you to be Apache?
Well, I guess what it means to me is a part of the creation that God made the world to be. That would be the most important thing for me.
So what's your connection to the traditional lands of your people, and in particular Oak Flat?
It comes right down to our identity, our culture, and basically who we are in the creation of time to be what we are today. So that's what it is to me.
So you live on the San Carlos Apache Reservation, which was created artificially out of the colonization process and the period of the Indian Wars. What's the relationship between the reservation itself and the traditional homelands, including Oak Flat?
For us, I guess, if people would put themselves in our shoes, you know, what the American people sees first is state, county lines, and so forth, you know. But for us, you know, it's always been the original land of the people. And that's the first thing that comes to mind. And so when the question is asked to me, you know, how's the reservation to the component of where Oak Flat sits, it's our home. It's basically our home. The stories, the religion, the culture has all resonated from that area, from the creator touching the earth. So, you know, I that's the point of view of how we see it.
So how about your family connection? Can you say anything about growing up? I understand you grew up in a traditional household. Did you hear stories about these places?
Well, it's like what you just stated a few minutes ago about how we were put there as prisoners of war. So if you take from my mother to her grandmother and her exercising before she was exiled out of that area, and then my mother knowingly had the little opportunities to go back, you know, under at that time federal guidance to make sure that they were brought back to the reservation after visiting that area. And then comes my generation that, you know, my mother took me back to do our prayers and our ceremonies through her family bloodline. And so the connection, as far as what it means to us, is, again, it goes back to the identity and the importance of who we are. So we really see no dividing lines that other people may assume or from their perspective of what they see. So it's really important that for us that we continue to keep who we are and what we are. So there's never been really no breakage, you know, or a disconnect. But with this proposed mining, there is going to be a disconnect with me being alive yet, and then my granddaughter's generation that's yet to come, it will be a total disconnect.
Let's go into that then. So this came about through the National Defense Authorization Act of 2014, with this amendment stuck in there by Arizona's two senators, which essentially privatizes the land around Oak Flat and gives it to the mining multinational Rio Tinto. Was there any public consultation that you know of prior to that? Was there any talking to the Apaches at all?
Well, this is why the fight goes on, is because there's a trust responsibility between the United States and federal recognized Indian tribes, which is one of which we're one tribe. And from the very beginning to this point, as I speak to you today, there's been no consultation. There's been no connection between the United States and us. And that's the failure of the government's responsibility. And this is why the fight continues today, because of that, because one of the most important part of the federal government has been neglected with the tribe.
And so that's part of your responsibilities as a tribal councilman?
Well, on the tribal councilman, yes, to assure that the United States follow the laws that they mandated on Indian tribes. And so at this point, you know, again, you know, there's been failure on the part of the United States Congress and those who support this land exchange.
So, you know, you've done a lot of things. This isn't the first effort to protect lands important to the Apaches. I know you were involved in the Mount Graham struggle for many years. It seems like, from my understanding, it was perhaps difficult for Apaches to make a stand just because of the history and the, you know, the hostility of some of the areas surrounding the reservation and the really difficult circumstances historically on the San Carlos Reservation. Have you seen sort of a resurgence of Apaches taking a strong stand on those kind of issues affecting the traditional lands surrounding the reservation?
Well, I guess the best way to explain that is kind of doing like a chronology. You know, if you look at the 1800s, you know, the Apache people were brought in as prisoners of war, and then not until 1934, when the United States amended the Constitution of the United States to create one for Indian tribes throughout North America. And then you still have outline where there was still military involvement, and all the way up to the creation from the War Department to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, who really is, you know, connected to the War Department, and that was created, and all the way up to 1974, when you had the federal policy that was changed to give Indian people self-determination, 638, you know, into where it gave some voice to the Apaches, or not just Apaches, all Native people. So, you know, we really didn't get a voice into the system until the 1980s. But if you look backwards, every entity that were involved had the responsibility to protect the tribe, as what was stated in the treaties and the trust responsibility and the conversation that were going on. So if you do that, then you could see how easily John McCain and Gosar and Ann Kirkpatrick played with history and not being out front with American people, what they did to the Native Americans. And in this case, you know, the Apache people. So I always look at the early 1980s where the Native Americans were finally able to exercise their rights. It wasn't until the 1980s. And this is where Mount Graham comes in, where we began to defend that, and as well as, you know, what's happening at Oak Flats right now, our sacred places being under attack.
I'd like to also talk to Nalin about the Spear of the Mountain Runner stuff in a second here, because, you know, that's something that you've also been very involved with in sort of reconnecting to these traditional places and involving the, you know, your communities and your young people in that. But, you know, let's talk specifically about Oak Flat. So what's at stake there? What is it about Oak Flat that's so important?
Well, you know, there's been 11 attempts by Resolution Copper, who is tied to Rio Tinto. And when they tried to stand on their own 2 feet under their own merits, it failed because there was never no transparency. Not until John McCain in 2014, when he did a late night rider, and again, using the same process that they did with Mount Graham, given the exemptions from all federal laws. And so this is where it ignited the issue again, you know, looking at a chronology of how land is taken, how water is taken, how the environment is affected. And it comes back through those types of exemptions that have now really has hindered us, but as well as all Americans. And so this is why, you know, we're battling again, because it is a holy place and it carries all the environmental importance of life sustaining there for everybody. So but this is what, you know, what brings us here today. Historically, again, it goes back to our religion and how our ceremonies and the rearing of our children and how it ties to who we are. And it's no different than Mount Sinai. You know, these places are very unique and very special, just like any other religion. And that's where, you know, again for profit, you know, for a mining corporation, a land's being destroyed, a religion's being destroyed.
So let's get into some of these. Before we talk about, you know, what's currently being done and what can be done, I remember you started the runs to Mount Graham from the San Carlos Reservation many, many years ago, before you became a councilman the first time, and then you were actually elected tribal council chairman. But you've always been doing community-based stuff, working with the youth, working with the people. So talk about the Spirit of the Mountain runs. What was that all about?
Well, you know, we have been exiled out of these holy places, and as you know, people make plans. You know, people plan for an assimilation, people plan on disconnects, you know, people plan on reestablishing people in a different way of living. And if you look at the atrocities and you look at how prison life was placed in San Carlos for our people, it was a total disconnect. It was to create people who no longer had the ties to the earth. And so it was really important for us that since we were able to now have a voice, since I was arrested on Mount Graham, you know, one of the important things that I realized from that was that the disconnect, and I no longer wanted to be able to be disconnected as well as the next generation. And this is why it was so important that with our people suffering from post-war syndrome, and they call it social illness on the reservation, but really it's just post-war from what they had done to us, I didn't want our children to go through that. And that was really important that we created this connection once again in bringing our children back to Mount Graham. And so, you know, that was really the main purpose and the main reason, because we didn't want the identity of our religion to be lost. And so it was very important. And now today, over 20 years, you see the big difference, because now the people are reclaiming their right to religion, the right to where God touched the earth. And so that's what really has come back, you know, to the people. And it was important that we do that because of what we were seeing in reservation life. And, you know, and now it's the same thing with Oak Flats, you know. So those two run similar with what the United States has done by giving exemptions to foreign companies. But, you know, it's been very important to us, and it has become a very big part of all our lives. And I think, you know, that's where Nalin has come into the picture of seeing the future and what the future should be like for all Native Americans. And speaking for San Carlos as well, because we're breaking that post-war syndrome that was created through us being exiled out of these indigenous lands of ours.
So, of course, before I talk to Nalin, you're also a runner, and you've done many marathons, and you obviously participate in these runs yourself. So, Nalin, so when did you start running?
I started running from the age of 2 as a Mountain of the Spirit runner. I think I was born, and after that month, that was the first time I was on top of Mount Graham. So being a part of the Spirit of the Mountain Runners, it's been my life. It's who I am and where I come from. And so to see my grandfather fight and be a part of, you know, fighting for who we are as Apache people, it made me realize and to continue the fight that he has fought for us and to be as strong as he has, how he is doing now.
So it must be kind of cool, though, to do, you know, with, like, people your own age, older people. It must be a really great experience, the run itself, I imagine.
Yeah. Every year, you know, I get to see my family and see the older people now as they get older and then see their children. So it goes generation to generation. And it makes it even stronger because we are fighting for these sacred places. And, you know, Forest Service or the United States, they think, oh, they're going to stop. You know, this generation's going to end. They're going to stop. But once they see us as youth continuing this fight, then they now know that this is no longer going to end, that we are going to continue to fight.
So it's a whole cultural, political, education, and personal testing yourself also?
Yeah, I think what really helps us a lot is the spiritual part of it. You know, as a young girl, I think without Mount Graham or Oak Flat, I wouldn't know who I am as an Apache girl, my identity of where I come from, and that goes for all generations and all the youth and our past generations. We went back to these places until the United States forced us on the reservation, and now that we're reaching out and claiming our homelands, we are finding our identity once again, and we're not going to let Resolution Copper or, you know, the telescopes on Mount Graham destroy who we are as Apache people and for all Native people.
Have you had your sunrise ceremony yet, or is that something you can even talk about?
Yeah, I did have my sunrise ceremony actually on Mount Graham. So I was the first girl for over 100 years to have her sunrise ceremony there. So for me, that was really strong because that showed, you know, the United States government and to my people that we are coming back, that we are waking up our ancestors and letting them know that we are still here, that what the United States want us to be non-existent in this world, that we're still here, we're still breathing, and we know who we are.
Can you say anything about what the sunrise ceremony is or what it means to you individually and the Apaches?
Our sunrise ceremony is a coming of age ceremony. So when a girl transforms into a woman, and it's a 4-day ceremony. When the United States forced us on the reservation, we were only able to have it on the reservation. And now, you know, us going out and reaching back to our original homelands, we're able to do it on Mount Graham, on Oak Flat, and anywhere where we come from. And so for me, it's our spiritual connection to Mother Earth as a female, being able to give birth and to give life to a child and to our people. And so our ceremonies are really sacred to us. It's our identity and our strength as females in our Apache tribe and culture.
Thank you. So obviously this is all kind of connected, both the, you know, the political fights, the spiritual reconnection, all these things. It's sounds like something very powerful. Have you made connections to other indigenous groups fighting similar battles?
Well, you know, it comes right down to within the frame. You know, I go back to chronologies. If you do the chronology, you'll see that not that we lost, but there was unfairness happening in this country and what's destroying this country. So if you stay within the frame, then that's the results from that. And so not only Native people, but America itself have to get out of this frame because it's not giving justice to the human rights of all people. And so this is why we're here. This is why we're traveling all over the country, because the people have to get out of that political policy system when it comes to human rights. And as long as not only Native Americans, but all white Americans and everybody of different ethnics and colors stay within that system, then you see the world being destroyed. And so this is why, as an Apache, and fighting this fight, I guess, since birth, and having that foundation of a base about how the world should really be, now takes me on this journey, you know, another part of my life, because it has to be said, it has to be spoken. And so for me, you know, where I'm at today is no longer living in this box that America has created for all Americans, because when we say decolonize, it's not just for Indian people. Everybody in America has to be decolonized, because if you look at how America was founded, it was founded to please foreign countries with their status of kings, queens, governments, religion, to take back all the riches from here back to that country. Then look at what John McCain did, doing the same thing by giving land away, 75% is going to go overseas. And there's still that manifest destiny. I mean, we really need to dissect that, because, you know, going through cities and towns and going through this country, you know, I have more hardship hurt from white people, more so than us Indian people. And then I realized that a lot of the white people live in this frame that was created by the United States, and that's colonization. So they're colonized as well. So if we're going to have a future for tomorrow, then we need to get out of this frame and recreate a new frame. Because I think the people who call this place America, they want to make this their home, then they need to realize how to make it their home. Because if they support people like that in Congress to give things away and to destroy, then that means that they never really replanted their seat here in this soil. So for me, it's not only became a Native American issue, but it's an American issue and a world issue. And that's why it's so important that we come and we preach this, and we make changes, the right changes in this country.
So what's going on now with this proposed mining operation? What's happening currently?
Well, it's currently right now is that in December of 2014, the land exchange went through the National Defense Bill. And so since that time, we have a repeal bill sitting in the House and sitting in the Senate. And so we've made a lot of headways with Congress. I mean, again, it goes back to the transparency, because there is those Congress people that realize that this is a bad bill for this country. And it sets the example for the future that if this bill remains, then John McCain has just wiped out the Native American voices, religion. And because specifically in this bill, he did not say it does not affect reservations. He said federal land. So right now, what's so important on these two bills that are sitting in the House and the Senate, it has to move. And so because of John McCain's influence, Paul Gosar's influence, they're having the bill idle right now. So the big push that, or one of the requests we're coming here to ask the people here is to help push that bill, because it has to be heard. Because even then, they're violating the rights of the Voices of America and the First People, because it has a sponsor, it has co-sponsors, all the requirement that's needed. But because it's John McCain and Gosar sitting on these committees, they're not allowing it to move. So our goal here is to make sure that we can get these bills heard in Congress, because then it's going to come back and show the American people John McCain's violations of what he did by giving these exemptions and destroying the first American people's religion, because it will set the example for the future. So there is two bills there in place, and we do need support from all Americans to make it move.
So I imagine in particular asking people in Oregon and Washington, Senator Wyden perhaps, all the senators and the congressional delegations, you'd like people to get in touch with them, I assume?
Yes, and that's going to be the big push, because all Americans got to stand up. And then the other most important thing is water. Water is a gift of life. And we destroy all the waters that we're doing right now, then what is it going to do for the future of all Americans? And that's why, you know, it's important that Native Americans take an active role and be a part and be at the table, because we know the effects. I am asking people throughout the country for this support, because if you look at the frame, within the frame, it'll be one victory that goes to all American people, and that's protecting the water and the land base for the future of all our children.
Been living with a fugitive inside of us, like Buffalo Wild under a buffalo sun, running in a closing in, maddened world, racing against the predators of spirit, in facing off with progress's addictions, civilized destruction's wanting habits, polite or violent, whatever it takes, with guns and laws and truth that lies. Domesticating the natural for harvest, threatened by what nature made free, with civilized rational aggressions wreaking blood havoc. And no feeling of tomorrow or the ancient in the plunderings of all our relations, the business of collateral damage, profiteering maximized in the carnage, running in a closing in maddened world, like buffalo wild under a buffalo sun. Sacred living reduced to looking to escape. Buffalo wild needing a buffalo roam. Between earth and stars, breathing free. Following the future through the looking glass. Ancestor prayers praying to the buffalo spirit. Been living with a fugitive inside of us. Feeling the human part of buffalo dreams. In the reality of all life is sacred. With buffalo medicine as one of the gifts.
And I'm back. This is Paul Rowland, extended second hour, usually on from 8 to 9 on Wednesday mornings. This is Political Perspectives here on KBOO Community Radio. That was Seventh Generation Rise, a relatively new group, their CD, The Fifth World, with the voice of the late, great John Trudell still gracing us with his presence on this earthly plane here. So you just heard Wenzler Nosey, of the Apache, San Carlos Apache Tribal Councilman. I had hoped to have him on live for the last 10 minutes of this segment to talk about some recent developments, but I have some things I would like to read instead. I had gotten confused on the fact that they don't have daylight savings time in Arizona, so we had the wrong time, and he's in a tribal council meeting right now. So he asked for people to get involved, and what people are being asked to do is to ask Senator Ron Wyden to co-sponsor the Save Oak Flat Act, S-2242. This is from the Tucson Supports Oak Flat team. This is what I'm going to read. Last weekend, Jane Sanders, wife of Senator Bernie Sanders, spent the afternoon at Chichilbagotil, however you pronounce that in Apache, also known as Oak Flat. Her visit and meeting with the Apache stronghold was another sign that protecting Oak Flat from the greed of Rio Tinto's copper mine proposal has become a significant nationwide campaign. Just last week, President Obama added Oak Flat to the National Register of Historic Places. Although neither of these important actions will save Oak Flat permanently or protect sacred sites, they are great steps forward. Senator Bernie Sanders introduced this bill in November 2015, following a version in the House that has garnered much support. This week, Senator Ron Wyden is celebrating efforts to make government more transparent. Sunshine Week is an annual effort for elected officials to step up and champion reform in the face of an increasingly closed-door argument. Oak Flat is one of the best examples of the horrific outcomes of this trend. In December 2014, Senators John McCain and Jeff Flake, yes, that's his name, of both of Arizona, snuck a rider into the defense authorization bill that would exchange Oak Flat for a piece of land hundreds of miles away. The land exchange bill had died in Congress 14 times before it was attached as a rider tucked inside the Defense Authorization Act. The Save Oak Flat Act not only reverses the exchange, putting Oak Flat back into public hands, it also sends a clear message to Congress that voters don't support our elected representatives hiding controversial actions. As an advocate for public lands and government transparency, Senator Ron Wyden is a natural champion for this effort. Oregon stands with the Apache stronghold and the future of Oak Flat. Call his office today and request that he co-sponsor the Save Oak Flat Act. That's S-2242. We'll be making a formal request in the coming week, and your preliminary show of support will help a lot. This is from the Tucson Supports Oak Flat team I'm reading from, the recent email they sent out. There is more info and a donate button to the campaign at the Apache Stronghold website. I think that's www.apachestronghold, but I'm sure you can use your search engine. Don't worry about not knowing every fact about Oak Flat before making a call. Well, our simple message is a demand for a more public and transparent process. So, as I said, President Obama did declare this to the National Register, which has really disturbed the people trying to bring this forward. So it was added to the National Register of Historic Places based in part on the site's spiritual ties to Western Apache tribes. A tribal historian with the Yavapai Apache Nation, one of the many Arizona tribes opposed to mining at Oak Flat, said lawmakers are both overreacting to the listing and are ignorant of this area's significance. That's because Representative Paul Gozar, a Republican from Arizona, insists that the place has no special significance to Native Americans. How he would know is unclear. And he recently condemned the, quote, bogus designation from the National Park Service. So the culture wars are alive and well. Now, this historic designation won't stop efforts to mine the rich copper deposit beneath Oak Flat, said Apache elder Vincent Randall, 75. The Yavapai Apache Nation, comprising two distinct people, is in the Verde Valley near Sedona. It doesn't have any teeth, Randall said. It's a victory maybe in that more people will understand this is a special place. But as far as the designation, it's not stopping the mine. That's why people need to get involved. The listing means that during the pre-mining environmental review process, stakeholders will have to thoroughly evaluate the impact on the historic site, which could add delays to the mine's timeline, said David Johnson, heritage manager for the U.S. Forest Service's Southwestern region. They have to consider and disclose the effects, but it doesn't stop it, he said. The designation is important from a public relations standpoint, said Kurt Shannon, Arizona policy analyst for the Access Fund, a land preservation group. Mine supporters have repeatedly denied the importance of Oak Flat, and that's harder to do now, he said. There will be a lot more public opinion opposed to this as a result of the designation. Resolution Copper Mining LLC respects both viewpoints regarding whether the site is sacred, their spokesman Bill Tanner said in an email. Okay. Resolution is jointly owned by UK-based Rio Tinto Group and Australia-based BHP Billiton Limited, two of the largest mining conglomerates in the world. But he also said the mine's economic benefits are also worth consideration. Legislators who say the site isn't sacred are ill-informed, Randall said, the Apache. Oak Flat is considered one of the sources of Gaan, or mountain spirits, for the Apache people. It's also the place of origin for the Apache group known as Dziltze, from which a number of today's Apache clans are descended. Gozar and Kirkpatrick objected to the redaction of specific location details in Oak Flat's nomination for the National Register, saying it made it harder for a citizen to find and object to the nomination. But Randall said the specific locations of holy places are closely guarded secret, even among Native Americans. On the Yavapai Apache Reservation, Apache elders ask that members only speak of those sites in their own language, so tribal members without close ties to their heritage don't know exactly where they are. So I could go on. There's many other things to find out, but you can go to the Apache Stronghold website, find out more about the Save Oak Flat Act, S-2242. I don't have the companion number for the congressional bill. Let's go to a last piece of traditional Apache music. I believe this is the Mountain Spirit song, the Glory Song. Let's go to that. Thank you for listening. This has been Political Perspectives on KBOO Community Radio. Only
All right, you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is now 9:59. Coming up is Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features an extended interview with educator and author Diane Ravitch on the future of public school education, also a hard look at the presidential candidates and their foreign policy history. At 11 on The Food Show, host Chris Siegel presents a conversation with writers Francis Moore LaPay and Marta Zaraska, and Spirits entrepreneur Chauncey King. Thank you so much, KBOO members, for your ongoing support. If you are not yet a member, you can remedy that by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.